On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the 2017 film Gifted. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen it, just be aware that we discuss the plot and it'll be spoiled for you. Enjoy.
It's Paddy!
Mr. Rob Gordon, sir, what will your pleasure be? If you like shit jokes and podcasting, you ain't never had a friend like me. I worked on that for a few hours.
I love it.
Yeah, so we went to see the new Aladdin this morning at 10 a.m. this morning at the baby-friendly screening. You know what? It was awesome.
Oh yeah, brilliant.
It was great. It was sold out because obviously, yeah, 10 a.m. on a Thursday, that's the time when all the mums and a few dads want to go. At first, I was the only dad in the room and I was like, please let me be the only dad. I don't know why. I wanted to win the dad competition. But yeah, there were maybe, they had to like put on another screen because it was so popular. So the screen holds like maybe, I don't know, 50 to 60 people. And yeah, so there were probably 70 or 80 people and you get free tea and coffee. So yeah, everyone's hanging out in the foyer. I've never seen so many babies in one place all at once. So you think it'd be incredibly chaotic, but actually it was fine.
Oh, was excellent. Good.
And even like in the screen, they had the lights down quite and the volume quite low, but still like good enough for you to hear and to see. And it wasn't that noisy at all. Just a bit of a sort of low background chatter. I'd almost go as far as to say that it was better than a regular screening, because at regular screenings, there's a high chance of encountering some tit who thinks it's okay to text or talk or shout at the screen or munch loudly or just generally make noise. Babies don't do any of that, do they?
See, that's why I'm quite happy that I have the cinema near me, where the most annoying thing would be someone whispering quietly whilst eating hummus.
Yeah. Oh, pass me the carrot sticks, Marjorie. Shh.
the biggest disruption I had was I went to go and see Rocket Man, and
oh, you did?
Yes, which is very good. I like it more than Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a movie that I didn't feel the huge backlash that other people did for Bohemian Rhapsody, because I got what I expected out of it. But Rocket Man is just a level above in terms of its direction, and there's a magic to it. There's almost these moments of magic realism where it combines sort of like musical numbers with the main story, and it's all framed in a very interesting way. So it's not your regular biopic. It's very different from that. But it does involve singing kids, and singing kids is kind of a deal breaker for me.
What, you like it or you don't?
I despise children singing in anything, particularly when they sing songs like Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, where you're just like, no, that should never be sung by a 12-year-old boy.
That
Stop
sounds
it.
Very wrong.
Yeah, it was bad. But thankfully, the vast majority of the film does not involve singing children. It's just in the early scenes.
Good. Yeah, I've heard that about it. And it's appropriate that the tagline for it is a true fantasy, which I think is actually a really, really good way to describe it. I say this as if I've seen it. I haven't seen it, but I think it looks good. And I think that's actually a much better approach to take with a biopic type film. Maybe it's not necessarily a biopic in the true sense, but I think that's way more interesting than trying to tell a true story that people might be aware of bits of, that people are only going to pick holes in. Whereas if you just put all that out the window and say we're actually going to make something entertaining that still kind of gets that story across, or definitely does get the story of a person's life across, I think you're better off doing it that way, aren't you?
Yeah, and you know how I feel about biopics in general. I find them generally quite boring. I get bored very easily of, oh, look, here's a person. Let's talk about how great they are and show them slowly aging and turning into an old person. I don't care for that.
Usually, oftentimes, it'll be, there was a bit of their life when they were a bit of a bastard, so let's focus on that and make it all about that versus the 30 to 40 years that came after where they were probably fine.
Well, I don't mind that. You know, you've got to remind people of when they were awful. Otherwise they won't learn from it, and they'll turn into Paul Dano from our previous movie.
Yeah, that was his problem. nobody ever told him he was awful.
Yeah, exactly. But what I do mind is just boring eulogizing over people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I find people are starting to take more risks.
You shouldn't read the Bible then.
Yeah, exactly. Bible, more like.
All that talk about that Jesus guy, you know, more like he wasn't so great. More I saw like, him kick a cat once.
More like Bible, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Disclaimer: I did not just say that.
Bible. Yeah, God, if you're listening, we don't mean it. Absolve us, etc.
We don't mean it. But yeah, I because you've got the upcoming David Bowie biopic, but it just focuses on a tiny portion of his life when he first visits America.
Ah,
or you've got the
who's playing him?
So it's Johnny Flynn.
I think that's right. Yeah, yeah, and I like him, and I've never been like a huge Bowie fan, but I get it. I think he's got three or four tracks that are really good, and the rest doesn't do much for me. But I get it. I understand what an important cultural figure he was, and the amazing thing about him was he was never afraid to just reinvent himself more or less daily, which I think is an incredible quality for someone to have and to still be, you know, maintain cultural relevance and consistency throughout a musical career. And you know, but I'd never be that interested in watching a film of him. But because it's Johnny Flynn, I'm actually quite intrigued. Johnny Flynn, who was in Beast, of course.
Yes.
Thought he was very good in that.
And I'd like people to do, I'd love them to do a series of different biopics about Bowie, because obviously he went through so many stages in his life. I want the crazy industrial experimentation of the 1990s Bowie, for instance. I'd love to see someone do a breakdown of that.
Yeah.
Or you know, when he reinvented himself in the 80s into a much more straightforward figure than the glam of the era before. But I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think would be a stretch for anybody to make. just to, you know, I think they've pushed it as far as they can down that route before like producers and execs start getting a bit testy.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that I think Bowie would appreciate as well, rather than just a straightforward, beloved, oh, he's such a genius film.
I am so great. Everybody loves me. I am so great.
Yeah.
That's most biopics.
Yeah, exactly. And most of them are boring as hell. Whereas Rocket Man wasn't. It was very interesting, very entertaining. Oh. Great performances all round. So yeah,
excellent.
Go see it, everybody. It's awesome. It has a great gay sex scene.
Excellent.
It's the first one of that kind in such a sort of mainstream movie, apparently.
Is it really?
Yeah, to the extent that it shows it. That's what people have been saying anyway.
That's kind of disappointing in a way, but yeah, I suppose that is fair. The mainstream cinema, as nebulous a concept as that is, still has some way to go.
Yeah, exactly. But it's good. I like it.
There weren't any gay sex scenes in Aladdin, unfortunately.
There was no scenes of Aladdin and the genie just
Aladdin
getting it on.
Yeah.
Getting sweaty.
Yeah. The genie gets his freedom, if you know what I'm saying. Spoiler for Aladdin.
Is it his first one? Just imagining the genie like, comes up and is like, "You've rubbed my lamp. What do you want? Like my first wish? Get undressed."
Just like right there in the cave. They don't even bother going outside.
No, exactly.
That probably does exist and is on a website called The Pornographic Hub.
The carpet just awkwardly standing in the background.
Yeah, and then Abu the monkey looks at the carpet and he's like, "Do you want to have a go?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure."
Bow, chick, bow, wow. Certainly
yeah,
hotter than
Aladdin.
Hot.
Yeah, Aladdin is good. I'm a big fan of Will Smith as the genie. It's very, very good because he makes it his own, but it still feels like a worthy homage to, you know, what was a very, very good performance from Robin Williams, a very important one. So yeah, I recommend that as well. I rate it.
Oh, cool.
It's good fun. And that's obviously the first time I've ever rated a film that was directed by Guy Ritchie. So obviously I don't know who I am anymore.
I do like a bit of Guy Ritchie. But the thing for me is that these Disney live action movies, there's something magical.
Live action.
Lion live action.
Yeah, lion action.
There's something magical about the way that they were animated back in the time. And so for me, at least, it's like if someone made a live action version of a Studio Ghibli film, it wouldn't be able to replicate it. So I need to try and separate the initial movie from the new one. And I was able to do that with Cinderella. Because they made so many changes to it as well that it felt very much like its own thing. But Beauty and the Beast...
they made it really long and dull.
Beauty and the Beast is terrible. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And that was just basically a shot-for-shot remake of the original one, apart from they added in a few bits here and there that didn't make any sense. And they had people who couldn't sing. Apart from Luke Evans, obviously.
I was going to say, you're staring into dangerous territory here. Of dissing Luke Evans.
But Luke Evans and Dan Stevens are the two things about that movie that make it work.
President of Wales, Luke Evans.
President of Wales, Luke Evans. But apart from that, and it's one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And one of the... I wouldn't even say it's disappointing because I don't really love the original that much. I recognise it as being a really good Disney film, but it's not something I love. But it's terrible. It's an awful film. And as someone who really loved Aladdin when I was growing up, I think I need to be in that space where I can separate it out from the original.
Even though
a lot of people have been saying, oh, it's better than I thought it was going to be. Can it replicate the sheer joy of the animation and the sheer wonder of the colour? Because looking at a lot of them, like the supposed live action Lion King, which isn't a live action movie, it's an animated movie. Come on, guys, it's just CGI. It's drab, it's browns and greys because it's real animals running around.
Yeah.
There was none of that colour.
In the A Whole New World sequence, I won't spoil it for you, but that was just was comparatively drab because it's at night and it was all... Yeah, I don't know if actually maybe the contrast was a bit off, but yeah, that seemed a bit drab in comparison. So that's all I'll say about that. But overall, very, very good. And I loved Aladdin as a kid as well, so I think it did, you know, it paid... It was a worthy tribute to the original that you can see as its own thing.
Oh, cool, okay. I might not see it in the cinema, but I might pick it up when it appears after its cinematic run.
Yeah, the prince is still fresh.
It was a film with two princes.
Yeah, Prince Rogers Nelson appears at the end playing in the credits.
No, because you've got Fresh Prince and you've got Prince Ali.
Yeah.
And clearly you've got Prince at the end.
Yeah, he's in the credits of every apparently. Film. Do you not know this? Because he's rocking in heaven. He's just like, yeah, he's in the sky at the end of every single film somewhere. Even if it's only for just a second, he'll appear on a cloud with his band and, yeah, sing you to sleep.
In the Lion King one, alongside Mufasa Cloud, it's just going to be Prince there next to him.
Yeah, because Prince is like a lion.
It was a little lion cub.
Yeah, man cub.
Oh dear. So Gifted is a film.
Yep, I watched that today as well, so I've seen two films today.
Very nice.
It's rare. A two film day, but the baby has slept through both of them, so he's doing great.
Oh, there we go.
Which means he's actually probably going to keep us up all night. It's all good. Yeah, Gifted. I had not seen this one before, but my wife really wanted me to watch it because she finally agreed that I hadn't seen it before, even though she insisted that I had, which was odd. But she really likes it and had quite an emotional response to it, and she wanted me to watch it for that reason, I think, more so than there being a romantic plot, because there's a very small romantic subplot, which ends up in the last scene of the film with Chris Evans and Jenny Slate locking eyes, which just made me go, woo, and then the film was over.
Literally locking their eyes together.
Yeah, with keys.
Yeah.
Padlocks. He gets a giant padlock out, and he's like, come here. I'm Captain America.
So yeah, it's not a romantic movie really. You've got those little bits here and there, and the two characters work well together. But in reality, it's more of a family film, and it revolves around this interesting family dynamic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Had you seen it before?
I hadn't seen it before. No. I'd heard of it before because everyone was around saying, "Oh, look, it's a Chris Evans movie where he's not punching people in the face that we know of."
That we know of, yeah. Behind the scenes, when he's down at the boatyard fixing all his boats, this guy goes, can you punch my boat?
Can you punch my boat?
This guy comes up and he's like, can you punch my boat? He's like, sure. Yeah, just to prove how strong he is.
Exactly. There's all these deleted scenes where spies turn up and they're like, we're going to get the secret math puzzle.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, you won't. And then he beats them up and it's all dramatic, but they decided that they wanted to cut those. I think wisely. It would have detracted from the overall feel of the film, wouldn't it?
because it is a film that has quite a few different elements to its plot that all interlink quite nicely, not in a sort of like an intricate fantasy way, like a Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, whatever. It's not like that, but it does have a few different elements to its plot. So if you were to add in the spy bit that was going on in the background with the guys from Caltech who were trying to get an MIT competing for this math thesis and all of that stuff, it just would have been too much. You know, we all know that it was happening. It doesn't need to be said, and it's really, this film is very, very good at, you know, saying what doesn't need to be said, right?
Yeah, and we all know that in real life, even Chris Evans is constantly being attacked by people. It's why he's such a good actor. It's that, you know,
how he got so chiseled.
He spends all this time, you know, trying to make movies, and even within the movies, people are genuinely attacking him. A good 50% of the Marvel Cinematic Universe fights involving Captain America, they aren't scripted. It's just someone turns up on set and tries to kill Chris Evans. And here he's there in costume, and he's like, well, I better hit this person with this shield. And, you know, that's how great he is. He doesn't let it stop him from doing his job, a job which he does very well. Back into serious mode now.
I don't want to go into serious mode.
I really love Chris Evans. I've always loved him. Not that one. I've always loved him as an actor. And I think he's someone who... he's had this huge explosion of popularity in part thanks to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, people love him as Captain America, but beyond that...
You mean not because of Scott Pilgrim?
He's actually incredibly talented. So, you know, in Scott Pilgrim, he's one of the people that makes the biggest impressions in that film.
He still, to me, will always be Lucas Lee from Scott Pilgrim. Because at the time when the film came out, I'd read the comics and I loved the character in the comics so much, and he absolutely nailed what it was in the comics. Like, it was just perfect. It's so good.
Beyond that, he's also in Danny Boyle's Sunshine, which is a film I really love, a sci-fi movie with a real unique flavour to it. And in that, he...
the most realistic sci-fi film of all time.
It's a really great film. And he plays this guy who actually is incredibly rational, that you very rarely get in these movies where people, you know, they make that emotional decision and they're like, no, we've got to try and save them. And
I've never seen it. Isn't it what they're all heading towards the sun and they can't stop? It's like Speed, the spaceship that couldn't slow down.
No, the sun is dying and they've created this kind of fission reactor which will reignite the sun. And their mission is to go to the sun, drop off the payload and then come back again. But there was also a mission, I think it was 7 years earlier, that failed, and they don't know why. So it takes these really interesting twists and turns, and it's an incredibly beautiful film. But it was just really nice to have someone in the movie who's like, look, it's the wreckage of the old ship. We can go see if there's any people to rescue and see if anyone survived. And Chris Evans' character's just like, nope, that's a stupid idea. Keep going on the mission. Go and save the sun. Fuck those people. It's like seven people versus the entire future of humanity. And it's really nice to have a character like that in a film, because often those kind of people are completely forgotten about. And he performs that incredibly well, and it's a very different character to his Captain America performance or his Fantastic Four performance or his Scott Pilgrim performance. But each of them, they show off a different side to him, and I think Gifted, again, it showed him in a very different light to what people normally think of him as.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought he was great in this. I thought he was really good. But again, it's quite a subtle performance as well, because it's not like he's in every single scene necessarily. There are scenes with other people, but he's in there most of the time. But a lot of the time, he's not actually saying much. But the few lines that he does have say so much.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really clever performance, and he's able to portray a lot about the character with not a lot of dialogue. And instead, again, it's kind of portrayed by his actions and by his sheer existence in this space in the film. And it sets up that contrast with his niece incredibly well.
Yeah, and she was really good as well, I thought, for a child actor. I thought she really, really nailed it, which is no mean feat, especially when you are playing a child that is actually a complex character. It's not necessarily that difficult to play a child when you are a child, and you're just given some lines to say and whatever, but you got the feeling that she genuinely did really understand the point of it, and that this kid was supposed to be a math whiz and all that stuff.
Yes, yeah, exactly. She, McKenna Grace is her name, the child actor, and she does really well. And it's one of those things where it could have gone down a very different route. Particularly in the early scenes where she's like feisty with the teachers. And I did get the sense of like, oh no, are they just setting up this feisty, sassy kid? Because again, that's another thing I really hate is when kids are...
is when kids talk.
When kids talk in movies.
Robert, children should be seen and not heard, Gordon.
Children should be not near the movies I watch, Gordon. It's another one of those things where... sassy child characters in movies generally really get on my nerves, but again here they put enough variety and enough complexity into her character to really make it work very well.
Because she has that sassiness early on, but then she has the real extreme vulnerability of a 7-year-old child that is really, really shown in a number of scenes, but without it being, I thought, hopefully you agree, I didn't think that it was emotionally manipulative, even though it did make me cry.
No, I didn't think it was emotionally manipulative at all. I do have issues with the plot of this film, which I'll get into in a bit after we've stopped saying how good it is. there are areas of it where I didn't feel...
It's the whole boat thing, right?
Yeah, fucking boats, man.
That's another thing you hate, is boats, especially children on boats.
Children being sassy on boats. That is the worst. Being sassy singing on a boat. Imagine, you know, like some...
Isn't that Mamma Mia 2?
Well, they weren't children. Imagine if they...
Oh, they were younger, younger than us, ergo children.
Imagine if they remade Mamma Mia 2, but it was all 9-year-olds. That is the worst movie ever made.
Or the best movie ever made.
No, the worst movie
I'd
ever
love
made.
To see a 9-year-old pretending to Pierce Brosnan going, when you're gone... whilst looking at pictures of their dead wife.
Yeah, exactly. How did we get onto that? I have issues with this movie, but we'll go on to that in a little bit later. Apart from that, we've got Lindsay Duncan, who's really good.
Now, what do I know her from? As soon as she appeared, I was like, I recognise her, but then I couldn't remember
She's in About Time. Probably recognise her from that.
That's a recent one that we watched.
Yeah, but she's had a very distinct long career. So Birdman as well. She's in an episode.
I never saw that.
She's in an episode of Toast of London. She's in Carnage as well.
That's a great film. We should talk about that at some point.
Yes, we should. So she's had a really long great career. She's really good in this as the grandmother. She's brilliant. Octavia Spencer, obviously, really good.
Yep, legend.
And then Jenny Slate as well as the teacher.
Yeah, who again I thought was actually underused in this film almost because she's really good and is in so many stuff. It's mainly I just love her as Mona Lisa Saperstein in Parks and Recreation. You've seen that, right?
I've watched a little bit of Parks and Rec. I can't say I definitely
remember. Mate. She's in the later seasons, so you probably know. No. You know the character John Ralphio?
Yes, yeah.
She appears as his sister.
Okay.
And she's like a kind of female version of him, like always singing at people and being really annoying and stuff. And when they're both together, there's only like about 3 or 4 scenes that they're together, but it's so funny. We recently rewatched all of it, actually. That was our kind of post-baby thing that we just have on in the background. And yeah, we just finished it. So now we need another TV show. Don't say Game of Thrones.
I wasn't actually going to say Game of Thrones then. I was going to say...
The Wire.
No, I was going to say Chernobyl, which is great and definitely one you want to watch with a kid.
Sounds cheerful.
It's genuinely very, very good. People are
saying, there any sassy children in it?
There are no sassy children in it, as far as I'm aware.
Damn it. Well, then I don't
apart,
want to watch it.
Apart from at the beginning, where a sassy child walks into the Chernobyl facility and goes, I'm going to cause a meltdown. And then starts singing and dancing around and then causes a meltdown. And that's really what happened at Chernobyl. That's why sassy children should not be allowed anywhere. It's really good. It's not as good as people are making out to be. People are saying it's the best television show ever, which is a lie. It's not. But it is very, very good.
I've not even heard of it.
It's very, very good. It's only 5 episodes long. Quite distressing as well. It's really well made. It deserves the high praise it's got. Almost. It's not the best thing ever, but it is up there with one of the real landmarks of recent television.
Wow.
It's really good. And it's got some very good people in it as well.
Wow. Okay, this actually does look quite good. It looks well put together. I'm looking at it now.
It's very authentic as well.
Stellan Skarsgård, also from Mamma Mia and Mamma Mia 2. Does he get his bum out in this one as well?
I haven't seen his bum yet. I've still got one episode to go.
Okay, sure.
There might be some bum action. We'll see.
And because it's Chernobyl, he's probably got three buttocks.
That's how radiation poisoning works.
Yeah, you grow extra things.
You do see in quite graphic detail what happens, which is quite distressing, but it's very well done. It pulls no punches, basically, so it is really good. Very, very good TV show.
Oh, I suppose the explosion of a nuclear reactor itself does not pull punches.
No. so that's very good. But what's also good is Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
To bring it back here. She's in Venom. Venom's awesome. People who say that Venom's
the silly film where Tom Hardy is a laughing demon man.
Yeah, where he gets into a vat full of lobsters and starts eating lobsters raw. It's amazing. I genuinely loved Venom when I saw it. It's one of the most fun things I've seen in a while.
It looks ludicrous.
Yeah, it's great. It's exactly what you want from a comic book movie. But she's in that. She has a little role in that, which is good. And overall, she's good in this as well.
Yeah, like everything I've seen her in, I've liked.
Yes, yeah. And so you've got all these good performances and you've got this kind of sort of legal tussle going on. And it's all about the well-being of this child who knows what she wants. But for the most part in the film, you're still in two minds about, you know, clearly there's a lot of love here, but is this the right place for her?
Yeah.
Can this person actually provide her? And it's not just about providing her the chance to be a great mathematician.
Which is the grandma's obsession.
But more sort of like they do have one bedroom in the place they're living in. And he doesn't have health insurance because the American healthcare system is some kind of horrible Kafka-esque nightmare where people have to choose between dying or being in so much debt that they die.
Or being stuck in a job that you hate just for the health insurance.
Well, that's kind of life, isn't it?
We're
all stuck in jobs we hate because we have to survive.
But in America, it's much more immediate.
In America, it's much more immediate in that you will die of getting an infected cut in a week's time.
You'll die of a third buttock.
Yes. And so it's interesting the way that it frames it. Although obviously you're always on the side of Frank, you know, played by Chris Evans. There is that kind of doubt in the back of your mind where you're like, well, could there be a better place for this character and for this child to actually achieve what she wants and achieve what's best for her? Because let's be honest, she's 7 years old. She doesn't necessarily know exactly what she wants from life and doesn't know exactly what's best for her.
Even if she is a math genius.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting the way they play with it, but I do feel as though towards the end it goes a little bit off the deep end in the other direction.
Oh, really? What, because it becomes this kind of intricate family plot?
Well, I don't necessarily mind the intricate family plot, but basically, so spoiler alert again, you know, you get one at the beginning of each episode, but just in case, another spoiler.
Yeah, I always record my intro.
Chris Evans, he gives up Mary, his niece.
And he gets forced to by the courts, but there's a point where he sort of stops fighting, isn't there, on the advice of his lawyer?
Yeah, so he's not forced to, but it's more that things could be much worse for him if it continued down that route. So they come to some kind of arrangement. So it's not necessarily by the court, but it's more the two sets of lawyers discussing things. And so she's put into a foster family.
Yeah. And as soon as you see them, you're like, the mum seems nice, but the dad seems like a really weird creep.
Well, he's
like a Jonathan Franzen type.
I didn't necessarily think that he seemed like a creep. They seemed like
Definitely writes books that were once relevant and are now just curmudgeonly old man pervert books. Books about creative writing teachers having sex with their students who are half their age. He definitely writes those kind of novels.
But she goes into foster care, and and it seems as though that's it. But then it takes a sudden conspiracy turn where the cat is put into a animal sanctuary where it's about to get killed, and you've got this sudden, oh, there's this sudden conspiracy and this mad rush to the vets to stop the cat from being put down.
A chase scene. Everyone needs a chase scene.
And then it turns into the foster family is part of a conspiracy with the grandma to make her a super math genius. And it just felt really strange, particularly in the way that it... There's some very bizarre critiques in this movie of the child care system in ways that I don't necessarily agree with, because in real life, most of the criticisms of it are that it's very difficult for foster families to take in children, and it's very difficult to adopt children. And one of the
it wouldn't happen that quickly. It's like suddenly she's there with them.
And one of the great difficulties is, you know, there's so many kids who need good homes, and actually getting them into homes in the first place is incredibly hard. Equally, another issue that often comes up is that child psychologists, they don't identify threats in a family home very well. And time and time again, they've been criticized for being overworked. Whereas here, it's the opposite thing, where she goes to see a child psychologist who suddenly picks up on, oh my God, they watch MMA together, and jumps to all the wrong conclusions. Whereas in reality, it would probably be...
UFC.
Was it UFC, not MMA?
Yeah, yeah. But not isn't, to be confused with KFC.
Isn't UFC...
Ultimate Fighting Chicken.
Isn't UFC just a the league for MMA?
Oh, I don't know. I assumed they were different things. See, I don't even really know what the hell I'm talking about. But MMA, MMA to me always just sounds like, because it stands for mixed martial arts. I thought it means that you're a person who knows like karate and judo and all the other ones, and you can do them all, and then you're up against some other guy who can do them all, and it's like, which one are you going to choose? So it's a really difficult fight. Whereas UFC is Conor McGregor biting people in a cage.
See, I think that mixed martial arts is the combat form which is used in UFC. So in UFC, you get people of different fighting styles. So it might be someone who's a boxer versus someone who is a judo expert, that kind of thing.
Right. And is that why it's good? Because it's like, which is the better skill?
Yeah. I mean, it's all nonsense, men punching each other in the face at the end of the day. But
that's no way to talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That is exactly the way to talk about the Marvel Universe. Hey, here's my big purple boy, and he just made people turn into dust. Let's punch him in the face. That's the Marvel Universe for me. But
don't talk about Prince, my purple boy. Like that. Don't punch Prince.
But in this movie, it's almost as though it's making out that child psychologists read too much into it. Whereas in reality, it's often the other way around, where they don't pick up on genuine threats within a household. And I'm not sure whether I necessarily agree with the message that that foster care families are a threat to the family unit, and that child psychologists are a threat to the family place where the family knows what's best. And I know that this movie kind of toys with that, where it's the uncle who knows what's best for the child rather than the grandmother. But it still feels a bit strange to frame it in that way when it's one of the most underfunded and most needed for funding areas of our society, of our Western society.
I don't think that the film did that intentionally at all. I think that's an unintended consequence of the way that it chose to resolve itself, and it chose to become plot driven in the last third, if that makes sense. So they had to invent this plot for him to lose her and to get her back. And it's like, how can we do that? Okay, well, we'll do the courts, we'll do the family, we'll do this, that, and whatever. Whereas it was actually more interesting to sort of tie that into his relationship with his mother, the grandmother. But then to get to that point, they had to make some questionable choices that, as you say, present child psychologists and foster care in a particular way. But it's only in one or two scenes, so I didn't read too much into that.
See, I don't think it was intentional, but I think the fact that it made those decisions to create drama in the film, I don't really think worked. And I think it took away from the overall message of the movie in a way that I didn't necessarily agree with. And I think they still could have had the conceit at the end, the mild twist at the end, without having the dramatic, I've got to save my cat. The evil people were going to kill my cat. Oh, look, they've lied to me, and they've lied to the courts, and they're evil. Oh, they're so evil. And I think given all of the grey areas that there'd been up to that point...
Was Lindsay Duncan not enough of a villain?
well, that's the thing. And what I
Could she not have just taken her away?
And what I liked about it was that she wasn't necessarily a villain. She thought she was doing what was best for the kid. But by the end of the movie, it's framed her in this way where she is an out-and-out villain and that the Foster family are out-and-out villains. And I really didn't like the fact that it made things so black and white in a film that had really been doing things in a much more careful manner up to that point.
But at the same time, he offers for her to publish her dead daughter's research, even though against the daughter's wishes, which is a kindness that I think really complicated it and I found very interesting, because I was like, she doesn't deserve that kindness almost, because she's been set up as this villain. But the fact that he shows her that kindness did make me rethink her character a bit.
Yeah, and I think that could have been more powerful if it hadn't had the dramatic twist ending of the supervillains. You know, suddenly
the two tutors who are sitting there silently in the room, and he goes, "You two, out."
I mean, let's be honest, those tutors, the moment that it was all over and done with and they'd had that discussion, they would blatantly have just nicked that research and just run off and been like, "Hey, MIT, look what I've got for you.
Yeah, check it out.
Check it out. I've done some maths." I think it would have worked better if they'd kept those grey areas in place. And, you know, you could have had, she's got a lawyer with a lot of clout and a lot of money behind her.
And a nice suit.
It looks like it's swaying the court one way. It looks like it's all over with. And then as a last resort, he says, "Look, I've got what you want. I've got this solution to this great equation. I didn't want to publish it. And I didn't want to give it to you because it was against the wishes of my sister, who said not to publish it until you were dead. But in order to save my niece from the life that you led my sister down, here you go." And I think then I think that way it would have felt much more natural, because there's this sudden jarring moment where you've got Cruella de Vil here out of nowhere. A proper evil character.
If math doesn't scare you, no evil thing will.
And so you've got that character out of nowhere, basically. Suddenly she is much more evil as a character than you ever thought. Whereas then at the end, you could have had that much more impact of her realizing, wait, the decisions that I made with my daughter may have led her down this path. And, you know, mental illness doesn't really work that way, but there are those kind of stresses that can be put on someone's life that can trigger events. And her recognizing that, I think, could have been much more powerful, and it would have made her more sympathetic. It would have made his determination to save her that much more genuine as well. Whereas there's this sudden moment of unnecessary action out of nowhere, which I wish wasn't there.
Yes, you're right. It was like suddenly action now.
Yeah, and they didn't even punch anybody.
I know. Where was the punching, Chris Evans?
He should
what's
have...
What's the point of him being in a film if he's not going to punch
He should have knocked on the door of the foster parents, and then when they were opened, punched the dad in the face. And then when the foster mum comes and says, "Yo, you can't come in," punch her in the face. And then he walks into the gazebo, and then the two tutors are there. One of them rips off his shirt, and he's got a big six-pack, and he's like, "Yo, you're not going to stop us from doing maths." And he goes, "Yes, I will. And we're in America, so it's math." And then uppercut.
Yeah. Yeah. So then his mum's the final boss.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got to punch her in the face to win.
Punch her in the face to win.
No, not. He's got to hit her in the face with his dead sister's research.
"I'm going to punch you E equals MC square in the jaw. Bow!"
It's the only equation I know. E equals MC squared.
After this, you're going to be an isosceles triangle.
Did you, when you were at school, they were teaching you the different types of triangle. Did they teach you to remember it by saying that it sounded like sausages, and that, like, because they're a random size, you could fit sausages inside them?
No.
I definitely had a teacher who did that at some point.
That's
isosceles triangle.
Oh dear, no, I did not have that.
It was all Pythagoras, was it?
Yeah, that's that's kind of thrown me there, yeah. Paddy, the sausage triangle.
Yeah. So anyway, so after, yeah, and then after he hits his mum in the face with the research, he goes back into the house and punches the piano in the face as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because he can't get his daughter a piano.
Precisely.
But that was a really, really good shot, actually, where there's a couple of... There are subtle things like that that just show good attention to detail, where there are a couple of scenes where she keeps going on about getting a piano, and he's like, we can't get a piano. And then when he's in there with the foster family, after he's done talking to them and it's clear that it's going to happen, they've exchanged just a few words, few terse words, then the camera just pans out to reveal the piano, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yes, yeah. Which is good. But I can't get over the fact that they were going to kill the fucking cat. Like,
I know, like, the cat nearly died. Like, and then he saved Bert. He saved the other cats as well.
He did save the other cats.
That's how you know he's a good boy.
It would have been.
He's a good person.
But what he should have done is had those cats with him when he went around the house. And then as they opened the door, throw a cat in the face. Attack my cat brethren.
I was thinking about that. So he's like, I've got Frankie's back at the apartment. And then he doesn't tell her about the other cats. So you're like, would she actually have enjoyed the fact that there were other cats around? I'm sure she would have done.
Oh, yeah. You know, what's better than one cat? Three cats. It just strikes me as a... Because if they were genuinely caring people, which, you know, the movie makes them out to be super evil, but let's be honest, they probably weren't super evil. At the very least, they would have said, oh, my allergies have played up because of the cat. Do you want to come take your cat back?
Yeah.
Instead of leaving the cat to die.
His mum did it.
Well, yes, yeah. And the mum did do it. But surely it would have been a much more decent thing to do than to give the guy back his cat rather than leave it to die. And that's the kind
of... They didn't know it was going to die, though, did they? They assumed someone would pick it up, and then you try not to think about what happens if nobody adopts it.
If you dump a cat, when you know that there's a loving owner for it somewhere, you know you're putting its life in the hands of fate. And so they knew it was going to die. They knew that there was the possibility that no one was going to pick it up. And that's my problem, is suddenly these people are made out to be genuine villains, and they act in ways which are far beyond the realms of what this movie has been leading us to believe. And it feels very... It doesn't feel genuine at all.
Yeah, see, it felt a bit contrived to me, but I was so emotionally invested in their relationship between Chris Evans and the child that I didn't care. For me, it worked for me because it was a plot device and I was fully immersed in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, whereas for me, it was a very obvious plot device and it really took me out of the movie altogether.
Like, there comes a point in films where... You know, if you are really, really invested in the plot, you forgive things like that, don't you? You forgive bad characterization.
Yeah, but I was very invested in this film up until that point. But there's a limit, isn't there?
I think it's because you hate cats. This is your this is your thing. This is why last week you say you don't like Oliver and Company, which is all about a cat, a streetwise cat. You can't stand a streetwise cat. Fred the cat, who's got one eye in this film, he's definitely a streetwise cat. He has seen some shit.
I mean, I am renowned for my dislike of cats. And people look at me and they look at my 90 photos of my own cat. They think that's a man who really hates cats.
The only reason you keep her around is so you have something to hate at home. It's like, yeah.
I come through the door after work and I don't go, hello, how was your day? I go, you little bastard.
Yeah, fuck off. You know, you've just had such a joyful day at work, you know, bringing you all of the joy in the world. You're like, oh, I have to come home to this cat.
Oh, it's going to want feeding and it's going to want cuddles.
It's going to meow at me in a cute way.
How dare it be there in my space?
Yep. How dare it have long, beautiful fur?
Exactly. I despise that little fairy beast.
That's what they used to say about me.
Oh dear. So I've got mixed feelings about this movie. It was nearly there for me, but again, much like our last film, that ending really spoiled it for me.
Yeah, and endings are tough, aren't they? You know, especially if a film has a sassy kid in it.
And once again, it's this move towards giving it a more traditional movie ending in a film that up until that point wasn't necessarily the most typical film.
Yeah, you're right. But it had a happy ending. With him sharing the look with Jenny Slate after dropping her at the Girl Scouts after she's been to clever big school.
Yes, yeah. And
so everyone's happy.
Everyone's happy, apart from their
grandma.
Everyone's
a winner. Yeah, but she could never be happy because she's cold and evil.
Yeah, because she's Cruella de Vil, apparently.
Yeah, for sure. And at the end, he starts introducing her to philosophy, because there's this whole thing where he was a philosophy professor at where was it? Harvard, Boston College. Yeah, philosophy professor at Boston College before, and now he's just a boat guy because he quit his job for whatever reason to take her down to Florida away from the from Cruella de Vil because she's evil. And at the end, he's like, let's have a chat about Descartes. I think, therefore I am. Ha ha ha.
Yes, and I liked that because it showed that she's this math prodigy, but there's still so much for her to learn in other ways. And it kind of proved that having her socialize with people of her own age group was a good thing to do, and that he was on the right cards all along.
Yeah, definitely. But she can still go do clever big maths if she wants to.
Yes, yeah. And so I liked that. It's just a shame that in the scenes before that, they nearly killed cats for no reason other than to make the audience feel sad.
Yeah. It's the cat manipulation, as they call it, which was first practiced by Cat Stevens, of course.
Exactly.
They had that song in that film that's always there in every film like this. I listen to the cats and the da-da-da. That one.
Yeah.
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 I like that song a lot.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, and at that point I'm like, oh, and that was relatively early on, they're on a boat and that song comes on and I'm like, is this going to be one of those films? Is this going to like emotionally manipulate me? But it didn't. Even though the scene where they go to the hospital and they sit around waiting for someone to come out and be like, it's a boy, is almost steps into that territory, but man, it actually got me. And maybe it's just because I'm a dad now, but it got me.
I think it might just be because you're a dad now, because I liked that scene, but it didn't get me. And this movie didn't come close to getting me in that emotional way. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well made, but it didn't grab me emotionally and pull on my heartstrings like that. And I think maybe
I watched the scenes, especially where she's like, don't leave me here or whatever, and I'm like, I don't ever want my son to know pain like that, you know, not that I think that he ever will, but you know, it's a thing that you think about. But you could think that about your cat.
Don't go off and become a boatman.
Yeah, I just make sure he never sets foot on a boat, ever.
Exactly. Make sure he doesn't become sassy and he doesn't set foot on a boat.
No sass, no boats. Those are the rules.
That's the rules in the Johnston household.
Yeah, that's the sign up. What does I will get to read it to me. What does the sign say?
Yeah, so I enjoyed it, but I think it might be that you were more emotionally invested due to your circumstances.
I think so.
Whereas for me, it was good, but there wasn't something that that grabbed me on an emotional level and demanded that I paid attention from that way. I was just more involved in the plot and the characters, which might be why when it takes those weird left turns into something less genuine, I became much less interested.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You hit it on the head there. That's why, yeah, our differing perspectives on this, and that totally makes sense, right? You, I'm sure you feel very different to me about the film Cats and Dogs, for example.
Fucking hate that film. Cats, cats are bad. Dogs, even worse. Oh, they're the sassy children of the animal world.
Dogs.
Yeah, they're all like, look at me. I can be loud and smelly and. And demand.
Hence the film Underdog.
Yeah, exactly. The most smelly and sassy part of the dog, the underdog. The
not to be confused with the updog.
What is updog?
Well, so this film was directed by Mark Webb, who also did 500 Days of Summer, which yes. is a film that we hated on, I think, didn't we? It's about episode 5.
Yeah, we didn't hate on it, but we kind of explained how it hadn't aged well.
There were some problems with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it had its issues. Whereas this feels...
But other than that, he's famous for doing Spider-Man.
Yep,
films.
So we did The Amazing Spider-Man, which is good. And then he's done lots of television, hasn't he, as well?
Yeah. That's not the Tobey Maguire's ones, is it?
No, that's the other guy, Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, I like him.
Loves lasagna, hates Mondays.
Yeah. it likes to express those opinions on posters in offices.
He does. So yeah, and I think this is good. So he's got Snow White next, I think, doesn't he? Mark Webb.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that. Yes, it says here, yeah.
So he's...
announced that he was in talks, it says here.
I'm looking forward to that disappointment where the majesty of old Disney animation is turned into drab and dreary greys and browns.
Yeah, especially as Snow White is ancient. That was the first like proper Disney feature-length animation, wasn't
it? Yeah, that was in the 30s, wasn't it?
No, it's 1920-something, I think.
I thought it was the 30s. Let's find out. Snow White.
I'm going for 1929.
I reckon about 1935.
Oh, no, you're right, 1937.
Oh, 2 years off.
Yeah. Still.
But it's
insane.
It's ancient, but it's still got that like wonderful feel to it and that kind of hypnotic old animation feel to it, which it's going to be very difficult to be able to replicate that, particularly given that we've already had an amazing live action adaptation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves in the form of the music video to that one Rammstein song.
Oh yeah, Sonne.
Was it Sonne? Yeah, that's
it. Someone playing a giant guitar on top of a hill. Yeah. You know what, right? When we first got cable TV, that song had just come out, and when I switched over to Kerrang for the first time, that was the song that was on.
Oh, what a first song. I love that song.
And I'd never heard of Rammstein before, and then I was really wowed by that.
Cuz Rammstein are great. I won't hear a bad word about Rammstein.
They are excellent.
Feuer frei, what a tune. Yep. Full of classics, Rammstein. And they're still going.
Obviously, Du hast.
Du hast.
Which means you asked.
But they're still going, Rammstein. I think they released another album this year.
Excellent.
Yeah, which is great to see.
And obviously they've done the music for the film Triple X with Vin Diesel.
Yes, the great, great movie Triple X. The film that everyone loves.
Yeah. The greatest action film of all time.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, so Mark Webb, you've got your work cut out for you, lad. As a man who used to direct music videos, you might have been beaten to the punch here by the wonderful German group.
Yeah, for sure. You've got to buck up your ideas,
Mark. Yeah. Alternatively, you just make a full length version of that video and I will be super keen on it.
Sorry, I'm on Rammstein's Wikipedia page. I'll just read you the first line. In 1989, East German guitarist Richard Z. Crispy escaped to West Berlin and started the band Orgasm Death Gimmick. Excellent. What a sentence.
That is amazing. That's brilliant.
Some Germans just have the most incredible sensibility, don't they? Where it's like, yeah, anything that's kind of just as rude as possible.
See, I'd really love to see a movie about the foundation of Rammstein now.
Yeah, especially as, you know, that was pre the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, escaping to West Berlin and starting a band called Orgasm Death
Gimmick. I have to read
gimmick.
You the next thing. At that time, he was heavily influenced by American music, especially that of the rock group Kiss. After the Berlin Wall came down, he moved back home to Schwerin, where Till Lindemann worked as a basket weaver and played drums in the band First Arsch, loosely translated as First Ass or First Arse.
Oh, that's amazing.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, someone make a Rammstein film. Come on.
Yeah, needs to be done. Yeah, that would be an incredible biopic.
Yeah.
A musical biopic.
Give us that. Oh, mate. I need to go listen to Rammstein after this. It's been so many years since I listened to them.
It has.
But yeah, so I can't remember how we got onto this, but Rammstein would have been a great addition to Gifted.
Yeah, for sure. You just get back and they're hanging out there in his apartment when they get back and they're like, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Want to hear some music?
Yeah, and then
we're about to watch some Ultimate Fighting. Yeah, just watching Ultimate Fighting with Rammstein.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant.
They strike me as a group of men who would understand the difference between UFC and MMA.
I'm going to search in case I've got it wrong.
I'm 90% certain you're right. Oh, man, Rammstein are playing the Milton Keynes Bowl the day after my birthday.
Ah, dude. Eric's first concert, Rammstein.
That would be amazing. So noisy.
Okay, yeah, here. MMA is the sport. UFC is the major organization. So I was right.
You were correct.
Good. Okay. I've regained my UFC credentials. It's an important part of my life to know that. Okay. That's fine. You know, I've never watched an MMA match.
I have not either.
I don't really like boxing.
I don't mind boxing, but yeah, it's a sort of, yeah, it's violent and thuggish, isn't it? And it's hard to get past that, but there is a point at which you start to see it as a contest, you know, feats of strength and whatever. But yeah, I'm not sure about it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is a very good sport from that like sheer physicality point of view, but it's not something I've ever really been able to get involved in. I've never really felt a passion to watch boxing, and I think MMA, I guess, is the same thing.
And you know, as discussed last week, there's also cockfighting. So why would you go to a boxing game when you could watch chickens fight each other in your local pub?
Or men fighting chickens.
Exactly, men fighting their weight in chickens.
Yeah, that's something that's not been explored by MMA.
Yeah, MCA, mixed chicken arts.
Isn't that the academy where they teach people how to make KFC?
Yeah, not to be confused with MCA of the Beastie Boys, God rest his soul.
Oh, bless.
Genuinely one of my favourite people, taken far too early from this planet.
Yeah, for sure. So do you have anything else to share about Gifted?
No, I think we've covered it. It's a good film. It's well put together. It got me, is the main thing. It got me on the emotional level, which, you know, a lot of films often don't when they try to be emotional, but it managed to tell a very emotional story without being emotionally manipulative, which I think is actually comparatively rare in film. So it's good. I've got a lot of time for this film, and Chris Evans is good.
Yes, yeah, Chris Evans, I think, is really good in this. It didn't quite work for me just because of what I've said earlier, but it was still a good movie. It nearly gets there. It's just that ending that kind of takes away from it for me.
Also, I would like to sing karaoke in a house with Octavia Spencer.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be great.
She'd sing obviously some great cool pop soul number, like whatever it is they're singing in that film. We then proceed to put on Sonne by Rammstein.
Ah, yes.
I don't know what the words are because I don't speak German.
Exactly. So shall I move on to a bit of trivia before we close out?
Yes, please do.
So your main man, John Krasinski.
What?
Good friends with fellow Bostonian Chris Evans, provided the voice to the MIT operator at the end of the film.
Ah, interesting. Is that uncredited? I didn't see that in the credits.
Yeah, I didn't stick around for the credits. I didn't reckon there would be an end of credits like spoiler for The Gifted yeah. 2, where Samuel L. Jackson turns up and is like, "We need you to join a very gifted set of students."
Yeah, and she's in her Girl Scout uniform. Yeah. He's like, "Come on, take that off. This is serious." Yep. I will take the box of cookies though.
So Chris Evans and Jenny Slate began a relationship together after filming had ended. But are not together anymore.
Yes, I did know that. Yeah.
This was Mark Webb's first original film since 500 Days of Summer. Because in the meantime it was the Spider-Man movies.
Yep.
And and Chris Evans and Octavia Spencer, they are both in Snowpiercer together. Have you seen Snowpiercer?
Oh, no, that's directed by my main man Bong Joon-ho.
It is indeed, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
A sort of sci-fi dystopia. It's a good film. It's a very good film based on a comic, I think. And I think being changed into a TV series at the moment as well.
Interesting.
So that's a little bit of trivia for you. How are we going to rate this?
Good question. I don't know.
How about how many Navier-Stokes problems out of 20 would you solve?
Yeah, how many Millennium problems? Would you solve before you were satisfied that you were the best mathematician ever? Let's see. I'll give it a 15. Yeah, Bon Jovi on a Bon Jovi,
living on a
living on her.
We have a little bit of a difference here where I'm going to give it a 12. So not a major one, but for me, it's above a Bon Jovi. But the muddy ending, I think, ruined it a little bit for me. Otherwise, it would have been much higher.
Yeah, and objectively, I agree with you about all that stuff. But subjectively, it still got me.
Still got you.
Yeah, it's all good. All right, what's next? Your choice.
Mate, next. You ready for this?
No.
Well.
I'm never ready.
We're watching a movie that we mentioned a little bit of time ago. I've never seen it. I want to watch it. The Lobster.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it either, and I think it looks really good.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
Good choice. Good choice.
Let's get on it.
That's a very good idea. I'm very down with that.
Awesome. I was thinking of picking something truly awful because we haven't watched a bad film in a while. But
we need to do a real shit piece.
Exactly. But I thought, you know what? I'm not ready to choose the shit piece just yet. We're gonna watch what is reportedly an excellent film.
Okay, challenge accepted. I will take the shit piece challenge.
It's like the ice bucket challenge.
Yeah, except we're raising no money for nothing.
We're just causing pain to ourselves.
Important money for the Shitpiece Foundation, which provides funding for shit pieces.
We should set that up.
Have you made a film that's done terribly? Come to the Shitpiece Foundation to make your next one. You won't get money anywhere else. Have you been blacklisted by Hollywood?
Yeah, if you've got a really bad movie idea that we're going to love, we will give you at least £10 towards making it.
Maybe 11.
Exactly.
We'll crowdfund it, by which you mean we'll go down the local pub, and after the cockfight is finished, we'll go around with a jug and go on, put some coppers in here for the Shitpiece Foundation.
Put them in the Shitpiece jug.
The Shitpiece jug. It's like a Toby jug with a post-it note on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Okay, cool. That's it from me.
Very good. Yeah, that's it from me. So obviously we've recorded 2 days in a row because you're going to be busy with the Entertainment 3 show.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So we won't have had time to get to any tweets or emails yet, but if you have anything to share, as always, get on the Twitter at @BigBoysDon'tPod, on the emails BigBoysDon'tGrowPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, let us know. What did you think of Gifted?
Are you Gifted?
Did it make you think of the Lighthouse Family song Lifted?
Oh yeah, banger. Absolute banger.
Yeah, great tune. If you had to rescue 3 cats, which 3 cats would you choose?
Yeah, Garfield, Felix the cat, and Raja the tiger from Aladdin. Because in Aladdin they keep referring to him as a cat, like as a funny thing.
Ah, I see. Felix the cat is definitely high on my list. He's got that magic bag which can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
so just the sheer ability to have that is good.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, exactly. Garfield. Yeah, I'd rescue Garfield, I think.
Someone's got to hate Mondays for all of us.
Exactly, because the rest of us love Mondays so much.
Yeah. We need to be put in our place.
Exactly. Anyway, right, that is it. That is it from me.
All right, we'll be back next time to talk about The Lobster.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.